Welcome to the Fire Time Podcast, where it's never hot enough, slow is fast, and the way to win is to make it so stupidly easy to buy from you that there's no excuse not to. I'm your host, Tim Reed. And once again, I'm so excited to be here today. Welcome to the Fire Time Podcast. Now, hey, today's episode is one that I have been really, really looking forward to sharing with you, and it is with my friend, Corey Anthony. Now, this season so far, we've been talking from a lot of different angles about how businesses can be responding to the market, and in particular, growing something that is bigger than just the business owner or manager. And in this conversation with Corey, I think that we hit on some really, really important things. Now, to back up a little bit, I met Corey a few years back, and as we've gotten to know each other at various trade shows and events, I have been just so amazed at how this guy connects with the dealers that he's talking to, knows his products inside and out, and is able to help dealers solve the problems that are in their business. And in this conversation today, we go a lot of different directions. And in particular, I'm going to tease out something that we talk about later in the conversation that Corey told me a while back. We were talking about businesses in our industry, and essentially, Corey said, you know, Tim, there's a lot of companies in our industry that are like the New York Knicks. They don't care if they win, they don't care if they lose. As long as there's butts in the seats and they sell some jerseys and popcorn, that's fine. But we're like the Toronto Raptors. We want to win a championship. And I have never forgotten about that analogy because I think it's so fitting as a business leader to be putting this into perspective and asking the question, am I content with the status quo? You know, sell some jerseys, sell some popcorn, but who cares about, you know, the product that's on the floor? Or am I playing to win? Am I playing to make an impact? To do something, to provide meaning and value. And that's something that's worth thinking about. Now, one thing I have to say too, that was just amazing. So Corey recently had a second child. And for this entire interview, he is holding his brand new sleeping baby in his arms. You know, just amazing. A true Father of the Year candidate. And so with that said, I'm going to jump out of the way so that you can hear this conversation. And we'll circle back at the end and I'll share some parting thoughts. Joining me from Bromont, Quebec, is a stove expert. I'm here today with Corey Anthony. Corey, how you doing?
Hey, Tim. Thank you. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. I feel like we first have to talk about your job title. I love this job title, that you are a stove expert.
Yeah. So actually, it's actually new for me this year. We just kind of changed my role here at Stove. And the role that's been given to me and that we've kind of decided together is to have a role that's very, very linear across all facets of the business so that I can help everyone whenever there's a urgent case, whenever there's something that comes to, you know, fruition that they need someone who's been in the field.
Yeah, that's really good. I'm trying to remember where we first met. I feel like it was maybe during the pandemic in like 2020, 2021. Do you remember where we first met?
When we first met in person, I believe it was in New Orleans in 2020, I believe.
Yeah, I think you're right. I feel like as we've interacted at different industry events, we've had trade show booths right next to each other. You were just one of those guys that from the very beginning, I was like, I got to spend more time with Corey. And I feel like you have a really just like vibrant and inviting personality. And I've actually seen the way that that plays out with dealers and customers of yours. And I'm really curious, it's just about your journey in the industry. Like, have you always taken that approach? Like, what got you into the industry? Maybe we could start there.
Yeah, well, thanks, Tim. I mean, you know, for me, for a long time, I envisioned being a skier and just someone to enjoy life. And life brought me back to the Eastern Townships here in Bromont, Quebec, which is where I landed with Stove. And so I started with Stove in 2017. And, you know, in that time period, I've visited over 300 stores coast to coast. I've put in countless of driving hours. I've seen, many, many installations. And for me, one of the things, the biggest takeaway is, really understanding your customer. And you preach about this all the time, Tim, which is, understanding what their needs are, what their wants are, what drives their business. And then the big takeaway from that for me is once I understand that, then I can try and see how Stuve can fit in their business model or what they need from Stuve to excel with our product line, right?
Yeah. So you started in 2017. What connected you with Stuve?
Well, it's a funny story, actually. It was way before Zoom and way before Skype. We had a Zoom interview over the internet, and this was the first time they've ever done it. This was back, obviously, a while ago. And they were looking for someone that was bilingual in a customer service role here at Stuve. And I was employee, I believe it was number 5 at the time. And now we've grown to over 40 employees. But at the time, they needed someone bilingual who could just understand, obviously, both languages fluently and who was willing to learn and eager to work into a small business.
Wow. What's the biggest thing that you've learned from all the driving hours and going to visit 300 plus businesses?
The biggest thing, I mean, off the top of my mind, the biggest thing is that, every customer is different. But at the end of the day, every customer is pretty much the same. I mean, they obviously want to sell high quality installations and please their customers. They obviously want to have, a couple bucks at the end of the year. So profitability is super important. But more importantly, they want jobs to go absolutely as smooth as possible. And they want the sales approach to be as easy as possible. And from a sales side or from a brand side, I think when people understand that, that's when we can really leverage our roles into helping our partners succeed to higher levels, because jobs that go south are jobs that are right off the bottom line, right? This team. So, that I think I quickly understood, and I quickly tried to be a master of our trade. So I wanted to understand everything and as much as everything about our product line to help deliver that value to the dealer side.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear that. What have you learned about building a brand? I mean, I feel like over the last 7 years, Stuve went from a more obscure company to something that's become really prevalent in the industry. What have you learned about building a brand over your time with Stuve?
So Stuve actually, last year, we actually celebrated our 40th year. And Stuve, we're very fortunate because we have partners in Belgium who have done this before, and they've developed markets in Europe before. And Vincent Boudreau, who's the CEO of Stuve America, when he founded Stuve in 2007, it started out of nothing, as you know. And, the idea there was to bring products that didn't exist in the North American market. So we brought, whether it was cylinder products that pivoted, whether it was guillotine products that had a different flare with a frameless design, whether it was super clean face, high efficient zero clearances. The branding definitely took time. And for the first few years, we often got told there's no market for that. There's no market for that. But now you look at, gas fireplaces, you look at electric fireplaces, and, more and more of the sales are linear products, are less and less traditional squares, right? So markets change, and the European market is always, probably 7 to 10 years before the Quebec market. And the Quebec market is always at least 5 to 10 years before the North American market.
Yeah.
We really knew, at least Stu's point of view, they believed in the concept. They knew the product worked well. It was a high quality product. And from a branding perspective, it was really to drive that visual to the customer to open up their eyes to new appeals in people's homes, obviously.
Yeah. And one of the things I've seen you at, again, different trade shows and stuff, as we've had booths literally next to each other, I've seen you interacting with dealers who are considering your products. And you talk about it in terms of like vehicles, where you might say, yeah, like it seems like your company does a really, really good job with this Ford product. What if we could get you an Audi? And you're not trying to take away this brand. You're trying to give them something that they don't currently have.
So I think from, early on in the industry, I was really understanding, what value was. And one of the things, Tim, and I know we've talked about this before between us, is, you know, you can have a really high value product that's, say, $5. But what about the value product that's, say, $20? How do we say that that one's so much better? And value to someone, and this is one of the things, is often we're pitching value based on personal budget or personal preference. But the customer on the other end often has values entirely different from what we are. And that's where obviously listening and asking the right questions is so important to create that customer profile, to understand what do they value? You know, what's important to them in this decision? What's important to them in this investment? And one of the things that I really understood, at least with our product line, is, you know, we have a lot of value in certain aspects of, you know, a purchase. Not everything, but we have super high value on certain things. And obviously the aesthetic is one of them, the performance, the visual, and the interaction, right? A lot of products nowadays in our industry, there is not so much interaction with the product. And we offer a product where the end user can be quite interactive, which is whether it's pivoting the stove, moving the glass, changing the combustion chamber sides. We offer that interaction, which to some people is extremely high value, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I feel like you touched on it there as you talked about listening to the customer. And I think that listening to the customer and understanding the problems that they have is the key to everything with sales. What's your approach to listening to customers to understand what's going to help them?
So for us, you know, the approach that I've developed is kind of a three-facet system, and you know, understanding, you know, the installation side is so important, and understanding the service side is also so important. And then the last thing, and obviously not in that order, it's the customer. And understanding the customer, the service, and the installation aspects, once you get all that, you put all that together, and then that's how you can really drive value through a product line. And at least in my opinion, and in my experience, it was understanding those three things. And depending on which customer was in front of me, what type of store, is it a huge volume store, or it's a smaller mom and pop store? Is the owner the installer, or is the owner the sales guy, or is he a sit back owner down in a house somewhere in Florida? Understanding who I'm speaking to and who I'm speaking for, is how I'll drive value to that person to hopefully, you know, be more appealed to our product line, right?
Yeah. We were in Eastern Canada last year, and I was watching you talk to a group of dealers about one of your stoves. And I stepped back and I was like, I just shocked. I was just watching the way that you talk to them, and you're telling stories about how your product works and how it's helping other dealers. And I was thinking about the way that you were doing it. So to paint the picture, we're in a rural Eastern Canada, and you're talking to folks who mainly sell wood stoves, and you're wearing jeans, a pair of boots, and a red flannel shirt with the sleeves rolled up about three quarters, I think. And you look the part. I look at you, like, you look like you're one of the people. And as you talked to them, it was very clear that you had installed these. It was very clear that you could answer questions when they said, well, wait, but how does that work in this situation? And you were able to say, oh, well, here's how it works. I was on this job, and here's how we did it, and this is the answer to that question. But I think that a lot of companies don't understand that they need to be part of the tribe. Many companies come in from the outside. They dress differently. They act differently. They make people conform to them. And they think that they have figured out the definitive way. So everyone needs to bend to that. And I feel like as I've watched Stuve in the marketplace, it just seems like you have become able to adapt to your dealers and their needs in a really cool way. Like even down to what you wore at that trade show. That might be what you wear anyway. But I thought it was amazing.
Yeah, well, I think, Tim, you know, what it really boils down to, and especially in where we are in the world, I think the most important impact you can have on any role you have is just being yourself, and not trying to be someone else. And obviously, you know, your visual attire, your dress attire, that can have an impact on that. But at least for me, you know, if I'm going to be comfortable and if I'm going to deliver a message, I want to be comfortable, obviously, with the product. And I'm not going to play, you know, I'm not going to dress like I'm selling to multinational corporation, right? When I'm talking to, you know, normal people who run, you know, hard-earned businesses, who get their hands dirty, you know, they, I feel they would rather know that they're speaking to someone who's been in the trenches before and understands how the product gets installed. And when things go bad, how do we fix it? That's really what they want to know. And at least for me, you know, that learning curve was essential in being able to deliver more value through my role at Stoop.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I absolutely saw it that day, that there was just a connection that you had. And like, as I'm watching you, it's like, he's one of the people. And I think that many companies miss that they're not one of the people. They're stiff. It's obvious, you know, it goes back to Seth Godin says the key to understanding marketing is to understand the phrase, people like us do things like this. And when I was watching you in that conversation, you were people like us. Like, you can talk to that dealer and say, oh yeah, well, people like us. Oh, here's how we do it. And, mm-hmm. and they follow because they're people like you. One of the things, just as a side note, that blew my mind, I had loosely known the Stuve product line, and as I started taking a deeper look at it, like, just the simplicity of every time the door opens, the bypass opens automatically, and every time the door closes, the bypass closes. Like, I still cannot wrap my mind around that. I'm like, that is the simplest idea, and it is so profound in the user experience of the product. I feel like I've just observed you really trying to listen to the customer to understand their problem. I'm like, do you have any other examples of like where you've listened in particular and been able to overcome a problem?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we've, you know, like any brand, we've obviously had our fair share of obstacles and we're not perfect, but you know, at the core of it, you know, Stuve obviously having 40 years experience with our partners in Europe, you know, they've been through stuff before, and that's been a huge asset to obviously our growth curve. And, you know, when we design products, we're really focused on industrial design, and it's some of the basic things, Tim, just like everyone has one of these in their house, right? And everyone has a fridge, and that's what I'm referring to here, is when the fridge door opens, the light goes on. But when the fridge door closes, the light goes off. It's not on all the time, right? And when you look at simple inventions in life like that and see how you can apply them to wood stoves to enhance the user experience, reduce back smoke, you know, increase ignition of speed, whether it's lighting the stove faster, it's little things like that, you know, we definitely pay attention to and try and improve on. And I think it goes a long way in the customer journey cycle, because they obviously feel the same impression, right? So
yeah.
That's, you know, it's a small example, but I mean, it's just as basic as that, right? So,
yeah, dude, I have never thought about that fridge example, but it's exactly what you guys do. One of the core values that we have at Wi-Fire is seek innovation wherever we can find it. And we never want to get so arrogant that we, you know, go to McDonald's, see something they do that's incredible, and go, well, that would never work in our industry. Like, I love that. Like, the fridge can do it, the wood stove should be able to do it too.
No, exactly. And that's where, you know, it's obviously a testament to our, you know, the years experience we have, but also listening to customers, right? And when we go about designing a new product, you know, we really want to understand how can we fill a need in the marketplace. And our goal, whenever we come to market with something, is to come with something that has a wow factor, something that's unique, something that's different. And I believe it was in Pennsylvania, Tim, when we had one of our booths beside each other.
Yeah, yeah.
We had just launched a new wood insert.
Yes.
And it was a wood insert that gets installed absolutely seamlessly. It's incredibly fast. And it was the first time dealers saw it. And I remember the first impressions I were getting, people were looking at me like a zombie. But once they understood how it worked, you know, people really got around that product. And even today, it's one of our fastest growing product lines, because we listened to our customers and the fact that the wood insert market needed an easier wood insert to install, right?
Yeah. 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 I'll never forget that like one person could do it, because you've got the shell and then you've got the flue collar and you've got the fireplace insert. It's pretty cool seeing that come together. Yeah. And I guess that does just go back to listening to the customer. Where's the pain point? Well, it takes four people to lug this gigantic thing in, and it doesn't trim out the way that it should. well, what if one person could do it? And what if it could trim out perfect every single time? Like those are the hard questions in running a business, right? The easy question is, can we make a comparable model to this other company that looks about the same, weighs about the same, and is a little bit cheaper? That's the easy question in business. The hard question is, how can we solve the problem that no one else has solved in the market?
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. You hit the nail right on the button there. And, you know, just as any company is trying to evolve and push forward, you know, we're one of those companies that likes to think outside the box and offer solutions where they don't currently exist. Yeah. And that's extremely difficult, as you know.
So in one of our early conversations, you gave me this example, and I might be putting words in your mouth, but this is the way that I understood what you said. And I think that this is so true, and I have used it many times since then. But we were kind of commiserating about the industry and some of the difficulties in it. And you said, you know, Tim, a lot of manufacturers are like the New York Knicks. They're totally fine losing most of their games and having a mediocre product as long as there's butts in the seats buying popcorn. But we're the Toronto Raptors. We want to win a championship. And I think that is one of the best ways to describe our industry. And I'd like you to talk about the difference between those two mentalities.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I think was it that year or the year after that the Toronto Raptors won? Anyhow,
it was the year after they won. So the Raptors had just won the championship when you told me that.
Yeah. And, you know, and obviously, you know, basketball is a little bit different, and being a Canadian market, it's a little bit different, but it has its same challenges that we have in the US market, in that, you know, store owners are a little bit different, and they expect different things than they are in Canada. But, you know, for us, what it really is, and that's really one of the things I've embodied in my role here at Stuve, is, you know, we're not trying to sign up everyone on every corner. Granted, you know, we want to be competitive. We want to be in, you know, the best stores and as many stores as we can. But we're not trying to do all things to everyone, right?
Yeah.
And once you understand that, and I think that's a testament to, you know, everything else that's going on in the world, is everyone's often trying to sell anything and everything to anyone. And once you take a step away from that and realize that, you know, what am I good at? What do I excel at? What do I like? What do I enjoy? And who do I want to work with? And once you take a step away from that, that's where it can be extremely fun, because you really focus on what you really enjoy and what you're good at, right? And, you know, another example, Tim, is, let's say, I don't know, you like cooking, right? But you don't like doing the dishwashers. You don't like cleaning your cutlery. Well, buy yourself a dishwasher and focus on the cooking, right?
Yeah.
But too many people in our industry, and you know this, and, you know, they like to sell every single product to every single store. And that's obviously one of the ways that, you know, you're just trying to put butts in the seat, right?
Yeah. 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 I mean, at the dealer level, for sure. Like, are we good at it? Well, I'm not sure, but it's another thing we can try to sell. It's like, okay, well, you just sold some popcorn, but the product on the court's mediocre, you know? Or if you're a manufacturer that is just concerned with, well, hey, our sales are low, let's just set up more dealers, as opposed to let's make a better product, or let's be intentional with the dealers that we have. Like, one of those is the mentality of butts in the seats, and the other one is let's go win a championship. And I think that example is so true. As you were talking about dealers there, something came to mind for me, because I think that many dealers, again, are all things to all people, like you said. But I remember a conversation that I had. I might have told this story a couple of years ago on the podcast, but years ago, I was trying to sell all these crazy jobs as a retail sales manager. And I remember that my boss came and sat me down and said, Tim, like, we don't want to sell these kind of jobs. And I'm like, but these are so cool. And like, we can, you know, do these amazing things. And he basically said, Tim, here's the thing. We have a freeway that we can drive really fast on if we stick with these products in these type of situations. And to do this stuff that you're talking about, we're having to build a new road. So it means that we have to drive way slower. And it means that until we get the concrete poured, it's going to be really bumpy. And right now there's trees in the way. And he said, stick to the freeway and slowly add more lanes to the freeway, as opposed to trying to make this new offshoot. And maybe that does mean adding this extra product or, you know, adding this related item, but it's based on what we already do really well versus trying to start something up that we're not good at. That's what it made me think about when you were just talking.
Yeah. Wow. I love it, Tim. I'm just thinking about driving down the highway. Where was I once? Probably in Chicago. And it was like the first 4 or 5 lane highway I've ever been on in my life.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about that when I went and visited stores around there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at the time, and this is what we ended up adopting to is, we would rank jobs on a scale of A, B, C, D, depending on how good the opportunity was. So before it closed, we'd have a rating system for it. And, with new salespeople, they were only allowed for their first number of months in the company to sell gas inserts when there was gas line already inside of a masonry fireplace. Now, for us in the Pacific Northwest, we had a lot of those opportunities. And oftentimes, salespeople would be frustrated as they were newer because they could have tried to sell that wood stove or they could have tried to sell that new construction ZC job, but they had to pass it to another salesperson. What we found, though, was that there was never a shortage of brick fireplaces with gas line inside of them that need a gas insert if we were willing to have that salesperson say no to the peripheral stuff. Now, in a given market, maybe your A-level job is that one-story wood insert in a masonry fireplace. Maybe in your market, that A-level job is a new construction, zero-clearance fireplace out the back. But what we found was that there were many A-level jobs that we would not pursue the way we should have because we were so busy chasing C and D stuff.
Mm-hmm. And you know, Tim, just like you said, it's so tempting, right? It's kind of like, and here's the perfect example. You know, I don't ride horses, but I'm going to pretend I ride a horse here. Is I'm riding a horse down a creek and I see this beautiful mountain range and a sunset over the ridge and I want to go see it, right? But I got to get up the hill to get there. And I just don't know how that's going to go because I met the horse 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
But 9 out of 10 people would try and do it because they want to see the sunset, right? And when you understand kind of what you just said is sticking to your lane and your highway and expanding it, obviously that's where you reduce hitting trees, you know, obviously you reduce your risk. And that's where you ensure that you're at your best, right? You're on that first line, really giving it your all and not trying to be the water boy, trying to be the dancer, and trying to be the punter as well.
Yeah, dude. So, okay, this came to mind as you were just saying that. So in the book, Good to Great, Jim Collins has this analogy he calls the hedgehog concept. And it has to do with a fable about the hedgehog versus the fox and other kinds of animals. The point of it, though, is that the hedgehog concept is that the hedgehog does one thing really, really well. Curls up in a ball with its spikes out, and that keeps it safe. It doesn't try to do everything. It does one thing really well. The hedgehog concept in business is where three things overlap, and those three things are something that genuinely fuels your passion. Number two is something that you can be the best in the world at. And number three is something that has an economic engine. And it's where those three overlap that should be the hedgehog concept of your business, the one thing that you go all in on. Now, when he says best in the world, he means by that best in your market world. So, you know, if you're a retailer in Kansas City, it doesn't mean being the best retailer in all of North America, but it means in your market, are you the best retailer in Kansas City? Maybe it's even more micro than that. Maybe it's, do you install wood stoves better than anyone in Kansas City? That's where the hedgehog concept should be if to match your expertise is passion and an economic engine. The reason I say all of that is like, I think that one of the things for me in my business that we've struggled with is we've been working through who we are and what we do. We have looked at, there's a lot of software tools that we can build. And some of those tools, we are not going to be the best in the world at. Other ones we will be. Like, I'm just convinced that we can build the best website in the world for helping a customer understand what fireplaces will work in their space and getting an estimate. But there's a lot of other things that we are not going to be the best in the world at. And we actually have to say no to those things so we can make space for the things that we believe that we are the best at, that also have an economic engine and that our passion is ignited by. But I think that the discipline of saying no is something that many companies struggle with.
Yeah, no, 100%. Tim, you hit the nail, you know, right on the bucket there. And I think one of the things that comes from that, Tim, is obviously experience and maturity. And passion obviously is huge, right? And in our industry, there's not enough people that have it or that have had it, and it's kind of, you know, evaporated over time. And, you know, for us, what's nice is, you know, we like to hire green people, whether it's for whatever, because we can get outside passion into our industry. And, you know, obviously I'm a testament to that is, you know, I bring outside passion, and what's important to us whenever we hire someone is they have to be passionate about something, whether it's playing darts, drawing, drinking water, you know, who cares what it is, but they have to have a passion about something. Because just like you said in your hedgehog analogy, if you're passionate about something, chances are for a couple minutes or a couple hours of each day, you can transfer that passion into your job.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. Oh, it's so good. You know, it's like you can't steer a parked car, but if there's momentum for passion somewhere, you can steer that into something beautiful. As we round out here, we've talked about a lot of different things, and I'd love to just hear you talk more specifically about understanding your customer. I feel like you just do a really good job of understanding the people that you talk to. What are the keys to understanding your customer?
Well, I think one of, you know, right out of the gate, there's obviously multiple, and not necessarily in this order, but, you know, being a good listener and being a good, you know, comprehender, and maybe that's not the right word in English here, but what I mean is, you know, when someone says something, to be able to analyze it and then dictate it and spread it out in a few different ways to really see how after that you can then, you know, have an impact with them, whether it's in verbiage, whether it's through a manual change, whether it's through a product explanation. And at least for me, what I feel has made me, you know, do good with the partners that we've worked with is I kind of see, you know, us, when I say us, I mean sales reps, business development, you know, you name it, what the title is. I kind of see us as a lawyer, right? But I'm obviously paid by the maiden company, which in this case would be Stuve. And I have their best interests at heart, but I'm also the lawyer for that dealer. Mm-hmm. And I'm always looking out for their best interests as well. And I'm always looking out for how we can have a win-win situation, whether it's in an issue that arose, whether it's in a trade show that we want to do, and they're asking us for commitment on it, whether it's a new product that we want to launch, you know, what is in it for them? And then how are we going to benefit from it together? And, you know, I think when you listen, when you combine the listening aspect to the approach of really understanding what drives their business, and then everything else in between, you know, tech support, always visiting dealers with a purpose, being there to help them. And I think the other biggest thing that has helped me is I'm a super curious person. I love learning and I love adventures. I'm the first one to raise my hand when it's for a new adventure. And I think the outside of industry knowledge that you can bring to a store to help propel their business is huge. Whether it's a new software program, whether it's a new business opportunity, or whether it's just some way to reduce their cost, their operating cost, right? You know, and I'm a huge fan of learning and absorbing and, you know, just learning other things that exist in other markets and other industries and other trends. And, you know, I feel like I've brought a lot of opportunities to the table to some of our customers to help propel their businesses in a non-fireplace related way.
Yeah. I love that. Listening, comprehending. And I think the key that you said there to tie it all together is understanding what drives their business. I think that that's what a lot of reps miss. I think that a lot of reps, they might have really cool products in an isolated vacuum, and they might know those products really well. But when you don't understand what drives the business of the company that you're talking to, it's really hard to make that connection. But like when someone is trying to sell me something for my business, if they can show me that they understand how my business works and they can point out maybe a blind spot that I have and show me how to fix that, I mean, that person gets instant trust and credibility with me because they understand me.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%, Tim. And you know, one of the things is a lot of business owners or store managers, they're kind of like the pilot in a car, right? they're looking forward. And, you know, at least the way I see myself is I'm the rear view mirror and the side mirrors.
Oh, dude.
You know, I'm looking at their car going forward, but I'm trying to see how I can help them go forward faster or stay on the lines easier. And for me, that's just one of the things that, you know, for the stores that I've worked with, you know, we haven't been perfect with every store, nor is any business. But, you know, I guarantee if you talk to 9 out of 10 stores that we've worked with or I've worked with directly, you know, they're super pumped that I'm on their team. Right.
Yeah. I know that for sure. Yeah. That's awesome, man. I love that analogy. The owner of the business, they're driving the car. And it can be really hard sometimes to look out the rear view mirror because now you're not looking at what's in front of you. And so to have someone like you alongside as that side mirror, as that rear view mirror to give context and direction to the driver is huge. I love that. I think that's very, very fitting. Well, dude, this has been amazing. I really appreciate your time doing this. I know that you've been holding a sick child for the entire interview and man, sales rep and father of the year. Thanks for being here, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Tim. I appreciate it. It's a great opportunity and I look forward to seeing you in Orlando, buddy.
I know. I'll see you real soon.
All right. See you soon.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that conversation with Corey Anthony. I think there is so much to take away, and there are a few things that I want to hit as we round out here. You know, what Corey said at the end about how his job as a sales rep is to be able to be the rear view mirror and the side view mirror for the retailer is very profound. And again, you've heard us talk a lot this season about the value that sales reps do or sometimes don't bring to their dealers. And the best sales reps, they are that rear view and side view mirror, being able to provide context and insight to help the business owner or manager continue to drive the vehicle forward. There is so much wisdom in that. And your best reps are going to be providing that for you. You know, as he talked about passion at the end, this is so true. So he mentioned that it doesn't matter if your passion is throwing darts or drinking water. If you are passionate about something, we can hone that and work with it. And as I think about my journey in the industry, I think that this has been so true. So like for me, when I got into it, I was 18, 19 years old, playing guitar in a punk band up and down the West Coast, absolutely broke and just trying to, you know, scrounge for gas money, essentially. And I was so passionate about playing music. And it's interesting that that passion was able to be shaped and molded into our industry. Now, it took time. And that passion for music is actually still there inside of me. Like literally last night, I met up with some friends and played music until midnight. But that passion evolved. And it was what gave me fuel to become the person that I am today. And I would just encourage you listening to this that in particular, if you have young people in your company, find out what they're passionate about and ask how you can help them continue to pursue that. And I would guess that it will actually start to fuel their passion to push more into your business. One of the things I think is really, really true in life is that our insides follow our outsides. And our culture says it's the opposite. Our culture says if your heart's not in it, don't do it. But I would actually argue that our heart follows our behavior in many cases. And so if you can help invest in someone's passion as they're doing the behavior of working in your business and they can see the impact that that makes, over time, it will often translate into their heart following. I know that that was true for me at least. As we end here, the fridge light. I mean, how amazing is that? And it's so funny. Like, I first saw the feature of the bypass damper opening with the stove door automatically. I don't know when, you know, a year ago, year and a half ago. And to this day, it blows my mind. And all it is the fridge light. You know, like Corey said, well, yeah, when you open the fridge door, the light turns on. And when you close it, the light turns off. You know, like we don't want to have a light switch on the side of the fridge. What if you forget about it? That insight is so brilliant. And if you look at product innovators over time. I mean, I'm thinking about folks like Steve Jobs or, you know, Bill Hewlett and Dave Packard. I mean, people who made incredible innovations with products, oftentimes it comes from the most simple example. And I've found this for myself time and time again, even as we're trying to hone and innovate with WiFire. I mean, it is often the simplest things that give inspiration to incredible product development if we have eyes to see it. So think about that in your business. You know, just take the refrigerator. Where in your business do you have a fridge light that you manually have to hit the switch to turn on and turn off when you could automate something so that you never risk leaving it on when the door's shut? Man, I think that there are a lot of things that we can take a look at through that lens. Well, hey, if this podcast today was a blessing for you and you want to support it financially, you can do that by going to the website patreon.com/itsfiretime. That's patreon.com/itsfiretime. And to those of you who support this podcast on a monthly basis, it means the world. You know, we say this quite often, but this podcast runs on a shoestring budget, and we are really thankful to those of you who support it and believe in it. And to those of you who aren't able to, that's totally okay. The fact that you're listening and sharing this with other people in your business and, you know, across the industry, it really means the world. So thank you just a ton for that. So in closing, as you go out this week, I want you to think about two things. First off, are you content to sell popcorn and jerseys as long as there's butts in the seats? Or is your business trying to make an impact and win the championship? Secondly, where in your business do you have a manual light switch for the fridge that needs to be automated to make life easier and better for everyone involved? Those are two questions worth thinking about. Hope you guys have an amazing week. We'll talk again very soon. Thank you for listening to the Fire Time Podcast. To learn more, visit the website itsfiretime.com. Music from this episode was written and recorded by In Bloom out of Portland, Oregon. We thank you for listening to the Fire Time Podcast, where it's never hot enough, slow is fast, and the way to win is to make it so stupidly easy to buy from you that there's no excuse not to. We'll see you next time. All in to burn.